In the sitting room, Esme settled Caron in one of the wide low chairs, with the tray at his side, and herself chose a seat to his left, the heart side, to show her awareness of the family bond.
You have done us proud. And it's all over for you. The bad times, eh?
She had to expect other combat in the future. Surely Caron realized that. Perhaps he meant the recent trouble.
I certainly hope I never have to go through a court-martial again. Or the mutiny that led to it.
Oh, you did well. But that's not exactly what I meant. Though I'm sure it was unpleasant enough. But no more old nightmares.
How does he know about the nightmares? I'm doing all right.
Good. This is good. You know, even when I was still active, your father never stinted the good stuff when I came here. Of course, we both understood it was special, not something to be talked about.
What?
Your father, he didn't want me to talk about it, and I could see his point. You'd had that fever and nearly died. He wasn't sure what you remembered, and what was the fever dreams?
Esme fought her body to stillness. She wanted to shiver. She wanted to gag. She wanted to run away. She had done all those in past times without success.
It was the dreams. Just the fever. They said something I'd caught when I ran away. I can't even remember where I thought I was going, let alone where I got to.
She did remember a nightmare train ride, fragments of something else she tried not to think about. She did not know what tiny movement, a flicker of eyelid, a tension in the muscles along his jaw, but she knew at once that he knew something that she did not, which he longed to convey and felt he must conceal. Her scalp prickled.
Well, you want to find your father. That was simple. Your mother had died and you wanted him, and he was right there in the midst of a nasty little territorial dispute. That was when the Borlist branch of the Old Believers had decided to pull out of the regional planning web and take over the Upper Rift Valley.
Esme knew about that miscalled dispute. The Califer Uprising had been a civil war, small but intense.
No one realized you could read that well, let alone that you could read a map. You hopped on your pony with a week's food and set off.
On a pony?
Back then, you rode like a tick on a cowdog and just as happy. You were hardly ever off your pony, until your mother died. And they were happy enough to see you back on it, until you disappeared.
She couldn't remember that. Couldn't remember a time when she would have chosen to spend all those hours on a horse. What she remembered was how much she hated it. The lessons and the sore muscles, and all the work of picking out hoofs and grooming and mucking out a stall.
I guess you'd planned pretty well, because they couldn't pick up your traces anywhere. No one thought of what you'd really done. They thought you'd gotten lost or gone up in the mountains and had an accident. And no one ever knew the whole story, because you didn't make a lot of sense when we found you.
The fever.
Esme was sweating now. She could feel it, like a sick slime all over.
Well, that's what your father said.
My father said?
You'd forgotten it all, with the fever. And all for the better, he said. Don't bring it up, he said. Well, I guess you know by now it wasn't all a dream. I suppose those fleet psych nannies dug it out and helped you deal with it, eh?
Esme was frozen. She was simmering in her own terror. Cold and hot at once, closer than she wanted to some terrible truth, and yet not able to move away. She could feel his gaze on her head, and knew if she looked up, she would not be able to hide her terror and confusion. Instead, she busied her hands among the little dishes of breads and condiments, pouring the tea, handing over a delicate cup and saucer. She could hardly believe her hands were so steady.
Not that I could have argued with your father, of course, under the circumstances. It was not only my duty to him as my commander, but he was your father. He knew best. Only I did wonder sometimes if you remembered something from before the fever. If perhaps that was what changed you.
Well, my mother had died, and I was sick so long.
If you had been my daughter, I think I would have told you. It helps the trainees to talk things through after a bad engagement.
My father thought differently.
Esme felt drought cracks opening in her mind, bottomless mouths to trap her.
Yes. Well, anyway, I'm glad you had the chance to deal with it in the end. But it must have been hard when you had the traitor captain to deal with, that second betrayal. Esmea, is something wrong? I'm sorry, I didn't mean...
It would be most helpful if you could simply tell me the story from your point of view. Remember, I had only my own somewhat fragmentary memories to go on, and the psych nannies found them somewhat inadequate.
The psych nannies would have found them inadequate if they'd found them at all, but they hadn't. They had assumed that anyone with her background would have had any such problems dealt with earlier. And she, convinced by her family's insistence that everything in the nightmares was just fever dreams, had been afraid to let them know she had problems. She'd been afraid of being labeled crazy or unstable, unfit for duty, rejected to come home a failure. Was this why her family had assumed she'd fail, even to the point of keeping her trail horse unassigned?
Perhaps you should ask your father.
I suspect he would be displeased at having his judgment questioned, even by the fleet psychiatric specialists. It would be a help, if you wouldn't mind.
If you're sure, it's not a pleasant matter, but of course you knew that already.
Nausea bucked in her gut, sending sour signals to her mouth.
Not yet. Not until I know. I'm sure.
It had been a time of riot and civil disorder, when a single small child, if determined and sure of herself, could travel by pony and then by rail some 1,000 kilometers.
You'd always been good at explaining yourself. You could come up with a story the moment you were caught out. I suppose that's why no one really noticed you. You spun some yarn about being sent to an auntie or grandmother, and since you didn't act scared or confused and you had enough money, they let you on the trains.
All this was supposition. They had not been able to trace her path between the time she left the pony and the last part of her journey, the train she'd taken right into disaster.
The last dispatches home had given your father's station as Buhalo Barracks, and that's where the train would have gone. But in the meantime, the rebels had overrun the eastern end of the county, putting everything they had into an assault at the big arms depot at Butte Bagan. The force at Buhalo Barracks was too small to hold them. So your father had rolled aside to hook around and cut them off from the rear while the 10th Cav moved up from Cavender to hit them in the flank.
I remember that.
Esme remembered it from the records, not from real memory. The rebels had counted on her father's reputation, which had never included leaving a plum like Buhalo unprotected. They had planned to immobilize his forces there with part of their army, while the rest went on to Butte Bagan and the supplies there. Later, his decision to abandon Buhalo and trap the rebel army would be taught as an example of tactical brilliance. He had done what he could for the town. The civilian population of Buhalo fled ahead of the rebels. They had been told which way to go. Most of them survived. But Esme, crammed in amongst refugees from earlier fighting, had ridden the train 2 stops too far. Both sides had mined the railroad, although the official reports said a rebel mine had blown the low bridge over the Sinets Canal just as the locomotive passed. Esme had never been sure. Would any government admit its own mines had blown up its own train? She did remember the enormous jolt that slammed the carriage crooked. They had been going slowly. She had been stuffed between a fat woman with a crying baby and a skinny older boy who kept poking her ribs. The jolt rocked the carriage, but didn't knock it over. Others weren't so lucky. Esme could just recall jumping down from the step, a big jump for her at that age, and following the woman and her baby for no reason than that the woman was a mother. The skinny boy had poked her once more, then turned away to follow someone else. Streams of frightened people scurried away from the train, away from the blowing smoke at the front end of the train. She had lost track of direction. She had forgotten, for the moment, which way she was supposed to go. She had followed the woman and baby, and they had been following others. And then her legs were too tired, and she stopped.
There was a little village the locals called Greer's Crossing. Not even one click from the train track where the shipping canal turned. You must have gone there with others from the train wreck.
And that's when the rebels came through.
That's when the war came through.
Esme glanced up to meet a gaze that no longer twinkled.
It wasn't just the rebels, as you know only too well.
I do.
It was right about there the rebels realized that they were being herded into a trap. Say what you like about Giovalantos. He had a tactical brain between his ears. And maybe he had good scouts, I don't know. Anyway, the rebels had been on the old road because they had some heavy vehicles, and so they had to go through the village to get across on the bridge. They were making a mess of the village because the people around there had never been supporters. I suppose they thought the people from the train had something to do with the loyalists.
The old memories forced themselves up, lumping under her calm surface. Esme could feel her face changing and struggled to keep the muscles still.